Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. You can find me on LinkedIn as Coach Sam UK. I'm a business and emotional intelligence coach. I have been in the industry for past 15 years and I have delivered several hundred courses, spoke in front of 8,000 individuals. So this podcast is all about heart-centered conversation with my guest. I have been blessed to get in front of or to brought in some amazing guests on my podcast. So do check it out. It's called Chai with Sam Dosa. Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa. This podcast is a global podcast, is available on iTunes, Spotify, and major other platforms. You can only search Chai with Sam Dosa or hashtag Chai with Sam Dosa. My name is Sam Dosa. I'm based in Birmingham, UK, and I'm known as Coach Sam UK in the social media. Today, I have a privilege to invite from Vermont, USA, Tana Isaac. He's a father of three children and do have dogs and also three dogs. And he's living in the middle of the Green Mountain Forest. He's working in green industry and currently coaches people to have more fulfilling life and help businesses to create teams with incredible engagement and intense productivity. So he has already started since the COVID had hit. He has now working with a lot of people globally via Zoom courses in self-improvement, self-worth, and self-accountability. So without a further wait, let's welcome my guest, Penn Isaac. Welcome to Chai with Sam Dosa time.
Hey, Sam. Thank you for having me on, my friend.
Absolutely beautiful. Thank you. It was a privilege to talk to you as a snippet on the beforehand. And the way you have is described the life in your world where you live in is so beautiful because it was all surrounded by greenery, it's surrounded by forest, it's surrounded by so much nature. And that's the beauty when you decide to start living your life in that sort of environment, which is fulfilling the vibration and pure energy. So welcome.
Thank you very much, Sam. It is a beautiful place to live. It's not easy to live here. We make a lot of sacrifices to live here, but we wouldn't trade it for anything.
Absolutely. So what decided you to, before I want to dive into yourself, I just wanted to understand what make you decide to move yourself from a hustle bustle life of a city to a life where you now in a sort of harmony and the peace and everything. Please have a few words on that, please.
Well, it's kind of funny. We lived in Memphis, Tennessee. And Memphis is the city where Martin Luther King Jr. was shot. And we've always tried to raise our children to look at people as people. And it was never the Asian gentleman or the African-American lady. It was always the lady with three kids, the man in the green shirt. We always tried to make sure they saw that. And they live that now. But it got to the point where Memphis is such a racially tense city. And keep in mind, this was 13 plus years ago. And we just decided that we needed to do something different. And I started putting my resume out there and I found a business who begged me to come work with them. And I did. And things changed. I eventually started consulting and traveling across the country doing that because what I found was just living in Vermont and working with just the small knit group of clients I had, I wasn't growing. I wasn't developing. I was pretty much feeling like I was at the end of my career when I was not. So that's when I started going into business for myself, feeling more fulfilled. And I'll share a little story later. I don't want to take up too much time, but I'll share a story later a little bit about my son and how he gave me the inspiration to do that. But that's why we did it. We wanted to raise our kids without all the racial tension. And Vermont's not a very diverse state. It's a very undiverse state. There's no diversity really here at all. But my children have found the people who are of different ethnicities here, and those are their friends. And it was pretty amazing. It's just how it worked out. But again, it's not so much about that. It's just treating everyone the same. Everyone has value. And I hate to look at someone's color of their skin and think that's how someone values them. And it blows my mind. We're all so much more than that. And one of the lessons my wife has taught me, she's 8 years younger than I am, she taught me is that we're actually a soul and we're not our bodies. So why do we put so much emphasis on that? Especially the religious people who talk about their souls, but put a lot more emphasis on that. So anyway, that's where we are. And that's why we're here. And the great thing through COVID is, Sam, is that I've never been in lockdown, because I have acres and acres of the Green Mountain Forest around me. And you see where I just go out and I make my videos, and I've never had to stay in my house or to stay away from people because there aren't a lot of people here. So that's where we live. It's the beauty of it. It's my inspiration. It's my energy. And it's my reflecting spot as well.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. Now I just wanted to come back to another questions related to your journey. So tell us about who Isaac is and what is his purpose in this world.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because, you know, I lived a life for so many years. I was raised by a single mother in the South. I mean, she was married four times, so she wasn't always single, but that's a horrible life to have been married four times, and she didn't value herself very much. I left home about when I was 19. I mean, yeah, 19, with about $12 in my pocket. I couldn't take the toxicity in the house anymore, and I went out on my own, and I pretty much lived a life of generalization, paycheck to paycheck, trying to make things work. Then finally I realized, man, I wasn't having a horrible life. I got a lot. I had a lot. I had a lot of opportunities. I had a lot of things come my way, and I worked hard for it. Don't get me wrong. Up at 5 a.m, you know, going till midnight at night. That was my life in the South. And so I earned a lot, but I wasn't really growing like I wanted. And I looked at myself one day and I said, you're getting so much. What are you giving back? What are you giving back, Thane? What are you doing to give back for all you're getting? It's kind of selfish what you're doing. And about that time, I also found this man. My wife brought me a book by this man called Wayne Dyer. And I started reading. And I read and read. And I read and read and read and read. Got audiobooks. I'd have them in my car all the time wherever I was going, just trying to learn so much more about who I wasn't and who I should be. And realized the power of intention. And not intention like I intend to do that, but doing things with intention. And then I found this guy named Tom Peters and this guy named John Maxwell. And I started reading them as well. And Tom Peters taught me the business economics, but it also taught me a way to think. And the John Maxwell taught me about people and how you should give to people and grow people, which I'd done my whole life, but not to the degree I try to do now. And one day, this will get to the story of my son, I was just feeling really down. Felt like I would, as I mentioned earlier, reach the end of my career. Felt like I was not really succeeding. And he said, Dad, what's wrong? And I said, I feel, you know, like I'm not doing what I want to do. I don't feel like I'm successful. And he said, well, so after we finished the conversation, he said, so what you're telling me is you feel like you're failing and you feel like you're not successful. I said, yes. And you hate what you're doing. And I said, yes. He said, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you go fail at something you love doing then? And at least you'll be happy. And I was like, wow. So I did a 180 at that point. I took that to heart. It still took me 3 years to get my business off the ground, to actually make the jump to say, leave the idea of security, which you and I know there's no security in the world. The security is what we make. I leave the security of a comfortable corporate job and went out on my own and started helping people. And the joy I got from that was incredible, Sam. But we go from success when we do that, when we're giving to people, and sometimes with no charge at all, just trying to help people build their businesses and build themselves. And when we do that, we go from success to significance. When we become significant in other people's life, we are helping them. Success will never matter again. And success is what we do with ourselves. Significance is how we help others. So that's been my personal mission in life for probably about 10 years now, is trying to help as many people as I can have a better life, and in turn helping myself have a better life, because when I help you, don't I help everybody? And when you help me, don't you help everybody? And then that makes the world a better place. Whereas if I'm not helping you, when I see you need help, I'm making the world not a better place. So that is my personal mission and my business mission, to help any and all, whether stranger or friend, have a better life and thus create a better world for us all. That is my personal mission and my business.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. That's so beautiful. I think I was reading this LinkedIn post somebody has wrote about helping others, helping yourself. And I put a comment and says, yes, that's how the cycle should be. You know, we have to help other people. There is no expectation. A lot of people expect a lot of things back from people helping others. And that's, but there is always one thing we have to remember, that we are here to support as many people around the globe. But also there's a tiny bit of expectation. It's not an expectation, I say. It is like a, you know, you need a commitment from people. You don't want people to, you don't want to be helping people and they are not committing. So it is perfectly fine. You know, we have time to support a lot of people, but if they are not showing commitment, how are you going to support them?
Well, I can tell you how I dealt with interns that have worked with me. One of the things I've done with interns, and again, these are things to see, are you willing to invest in yourself before I spend a lot of time investing in you? Because like you said, if I give and give and give and give and you're not willing to do anything, it's the results aren't going to change. So one of the things I do with interns, and I don't really have any interns anymore, but back in the day, I had one book. It was the same book I passed from intern to intern. And eventually that book got taken away from me due to someone passing who had it, which I would rather him keep the book and still be alive, but he did pass. So what I would do with this book is, it was a book that would take you about 3 hours to read. And it was called What Leaders Know About Leadership by John Maxwell. And I would hand it to him and say, hey, take a week to read this and then get back with me and tell me what you thought. If a week went by and they hadn't read the book, I'd say, okay, just give me the book back. Or they hadn't even started it. Give me the book back. You've told me a lot about yourself. Because I would explain to them, this is so you can invest in yourself. I would like you to invest in yourself. The ones that I've always seen that invested themselves, read the book and got back with me on it and gave me a review of the book and what they thought, those are the ones that I always thought had the most potential. Because we have to invest in the bank of us. We have to put that into us, because if we don't put it into us, we can't give it to other people, right? So if we're not taking new knowledge in and new information in, if we're not making ourselves better and stronger and trying to equip ourselves more, then we can't really help others either. And so that was a very big point for me. But to go to your message of helping others but not trying to do too much. When I lived in Memphis, I worked downtown, and there were a lot of homeless people, a lot of people begging. And I can tell you, Sam, I could never give people money, but I would always take them and buy them a meal. I would sit with them and eat with them and talk with them to let someone know they cared. But I would tell them, I can't give you money because I don't know what you're going to do with it. I don't know if there's someone else who's you're having to give this money to, but I will feed you and I will take 30 or 45 minutes to sit and eat with you. Many of them wouldn't take it. And but the ones that did, it was always interesting. I don't know how many of their stories were honest, but there were some incredible stories I heard. And I feel like if nothing else, I gave them a little bit of hope that maybe if they put a little more effort in themselves, they could do something other than begging for money. So that's the way I've always tried to look at, is I will help you, but I'll help you in a way that I think best suits. To hand somebody $20 and not know if they're going to go drink that away is tough, but to buy them a meal and talk to them, to me, that was more than $20 ever meant in their lives.
Yeah, true. Very true. This is the same. My thought process is exactly the same thing. I never give them money. I always give them feed them. Because I've seen so many people, there's a group of people sitting there, you know, homeless people, and they're always trying to pull a lot of money from people. And I say, you know what? I'm not going to give you any money. Do you want food? I can buy you food, but no money. Sorry. Somebody approached me and I said, you know what, Sam? Give me £5. I just want to have a travel to my place where I stay. I say, okay, whereabout do you stay? Tell me. I'll call them and check whether you stay or not, because I don't want just to hand over you the money. Yeah. So people are honest people on the street. Sometimes people are rogue people, because I think we can't judge people, but because our internal system has been designed like that, we quickly started to think about completely opposite and think, you know what? we don't know what is going to happen. We rather support them in terms of feeding them. And a lot of people will say, sorry, I don't want to eat anything, because people have already been given food to them. Okay, so your journey has been amazingly beautiful, and you have achieved greater output because sometimes our children do tell us something, sensible things, which because we are stagnated in our own thought process. And with this COVID-19, what was your pre-COVID-19, and now we are in COVID-19, what are your thoughts as how businesses should be running beyond this situation?
I think that this remote working is a long time in coming. I can remember many years ago when I was in Memphis, and one of my office administrators came to me. She had had a child. She didn't want to be at work all the time. I said, Jennifer, hold on. We'll make this work. If you need to work some from home and want to work here, we'll make it work. Never heard of remote working, but we have to be adaptable. And I hear so many people say, well, I can't trust them. Wait, you have them working with millions of dollars worth of your customers on a daily basis, and you can't trust them. And if you don't trust people, people won't trust you. And I think it's you have to take the chance and put the faith in people. And I know some people, some managers don't feel that's a safe way. But I can tell you from the studies, we've seen that the productivity on average goes up, that the employee happiness on average goes up, the employee morale on average goes up. I mean, I used to spend sometimes 3 hours a day in my car. I mean, what makes anyone happy about that? And, I think this is the way we have to go. But if we are coming back to work, one of the things I help people do is have a safe way to get back to work. You need to practice all the social distancing, all the protocols. But the other thing I always profess to people that you need to be doing as you're bringing your teams back is having weekly meetings, because you need to be gauging the temperature of what's going on. What if there's someone going around who isn't practicing the protocols and is making it hard for everyone? People need to be able to talk about that and bring that up until it becomes something. I mean, we like to sue people so much in America anyway. You're going to have lawsuits about that. So let's talk to people. How are things going? How are we rolling out? How can we do this better? And that's something I profess all the time anyway, Sam. We need to have the feedback from our people. Jack Welch will tell you, well, when he was here, he would tell you that where he got most of his answers was on the factory floors, not from the guy in the glass tower. So we need to be talking to the people on the front lines and asking, how are we doing? What can we do better? Because they're the ones that are going to know. And I think that's one of the key things to making this a success, as we do have to get back to work. But anywhere we can, I think we need to help people work remotely. And the companies that don't follow that are going to lose the best people, because the key people, the people that are the best performers, are going to go where they're treated the best. They always have, they always will. And to have that flexibility to be able to say, well, no, I don't have to run out the door at 5:45 in the morning to get there by 8 o'clock. What a difference that makes in people's lives, right, Sam?
It is. I think a lot of difference has made since this remote working, and it's nothing new, as you said. I've been working in the corporate industry for almost 20 years, and I used to work for a very large organization, and we used to work from home several times a week, and because it's the flexibility they have given us. You have children, you have other commitments, and sometimes you are feeling sick, and you've been told you can work from home, it's not a problem. Already we got connectivity to a Wi-Fi and everything. So, and this actually given an opportunity to a lot of organizations to create something better for their employees. Because I think it will create, as you said, the productivity has gone up and the morale of the person has gone up. I understand people are not interacting face-to-face, but still you have this opportunity to speak to people around the globe via this communication tool available to you. And a lot of people are skeptical going back to work right now, because they are feeling it like, again, they have to go into the same cycle. So waking up in the morning, running for the tube or jumping on the car and sitting on the highway, on the motorways, and they are just wasting time. And I think a lot of expert leaders or people leaders who are in understanding of this new way of working has actually understood that cutting cost on terms of buildings, cutting cost on their electricity, cutting cost of any other things, and giving this back to their employees in terms of, you know, giving them secure line, giving them secure flexibility and everything, it has doubled. A lot of things has been doubled in that sort of mind thought process. And also a lot of people have actually happy to work from home. And I think that should be the key driver for going forward with a lot of businesses, because Facebook, Google have already told, we don't want you to be back till 2021. So everything they're supposed to, because now if you are a techie, if you are living in Philippines or India or anywhere else, Google is saying, we are not hiring. We don't want you to be in California. We want you to stay wherever you are. We can work online. That's it.
Right. Well, keep in mind, I said I was in the car 3 hours a day. That's more than 10% of my day. You know, even with sleeping only 5 to 6 hours a night, you know, that's still not productive time. I mean, yes, I would listen to audiobooks when I could. I would be on the phone when I could, even though it's illegal some places, but trying to do what you can. But there's sometimes you're just sitting in traffic. So that's 10% of your day. You know, the other aspect of that is also what you were saying was happy employees. And as Ken Blanchard will tell you, unhappy employees can never make happy customers. So why wouldn't you want your employees to be the happiest they can be? Because wouldn't it be true that if happy employees can make happy customers, elated employees can make elated customers? I mean, that whole level of a higher happiness. And don't get me wrong, I know there's some frustration with people working from home with the kids and so forth, but it's kind of like that whole thing, people who like to fish say a bad day at the beach or a bad day fishing is better than a good day at work any day. To me, just being able to be in your environment that you've created, and you do have to figure things out. You know, we've done things where we put up post-it notes on doors, like, I'm in a meeting, don't knock on the door, whatever it is. So people know it's real simple. It's just communication. But to me, I would hate for people to have to go back to an unsafe environment simply because of someone's control and trust issues, which that's all it boils down to, Sam. It's trust and control. And if someone's a great worker, they're going to still be a great worker. People want to achieve, people want to do well, but they have to be given that environment to do it. And what better environment than the environment we created at home to do that?
Absolutely. Again, you said one thing which is very quite a key thing over here, is the flexibility being given to them is work around your house, work around your home style and everything. And now a lot of people have learned to work around those things as well. And they see that, okay, my kids are not awake till 12 noon, so I can capture a lot of work in the morning. I will wake up at 6 o'clock to 12 o'clock. I already committed so many things. And by the time your children are awake, then you can spend a couple of hours with them. And then again, in the evening, you can spend some time to put those tying all the ends, loose ends together. And your day will be fulfilled. You are balancing, creating a good balance between both of them. You know, and it's creating a lot of people, a lot of women who are working, used to go to work, leaving their children. Yeah, they're in the beginning, they were very skeptical about this scenario, but now they are feeling very committed. They don't want to lose that freedom to be with them. And this is actually very important. When you leave your child to a nursery or sort of a childminder or anywhere else, you are constantly thinking how your child is doing, or when you pick them up from school or from the nursery. There's always another set of thought process going on. Right now, you have created so much great plan with your children and with your entire life. You do not want to break it. You don't want to mess it around again. So I think a lot of employers are thinking of that way as well. So in your view right now, what sort of self-help improvement project you're working on, or what sort of help you are giving to the employees or employers at the moment?
Well, right now, working on self-improvement, self-awareness, but my personal mission, my mission earlier, but right now I have many missions, is helping people see the value in themselves. Right now, so many people out of work, so many people struggling, and people starting to question. I mean, a father who's not bringing in a paycheck for months, he's seeing no value in himself. And we have to make sure people are seeing that value in themselves to raise the level of awareness of how valuable you really are, helping keep your family together, giving them hope, not talking about what a horrible time this is, but talking about how we can get through this if we're strong. But in order to do that, a father has to feel like he has value, has worth. He can't project that, like we were talking earlier. If you don't have it inside of you, you can't give it to others. So helping others see the value in themselves is a very, very important part of my mission right now, letting people know that they have worth even if they don't have a job. And we have to get creative. We have to think of other things we can do to try to see more value in ourselves. My wife is working more than I am now because she has a retail shop, so she's always gone. So my big thing is to make sure when she comes home, she doesn't have to make supper. I make the supper. She doesn't have to clean up even after dinner. She helps me, but we do it together. I'm not like, well, I made supper. That's the way it was when we were both working so much. But now it's like I try to take a little bit more of that domestic load off of her because I do have this freedom. I teach people on Zoom classes. I have some one-on-one coaching clients as well that I do through Zoom. Used to, I travel across state lines. I can't do that now, Sam. I have to go across state lines. I either have to get a COVID test that comes back negative or stay for 14 days before I can come back. That doesn't work when you're doing a full day or a three-day workshop. You can't spend 17 days doing a three-day workshop. It just doesn't work. So I've taken to Zoom. I've been doing that more, and that's really been great. It's allowed me to be here more, and my daughter, who's getting ready to go back to boarding school, I've been able to help her take driving lessons in the evening. We'll take off at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, whereas before I wouldn't even be here because I'd be on the road all week. And I take her and teach her how to drive, show her driving things. We've had a better relationship than we ever have had. And put it this way, because of my traveling, Sam, I spent more time in the past, let's say 8 months, 7 months, whatever it is, with my family than I had in the previous 5 years together, all completely together. The time I'd spent with my family was so minimal. You leave on Monday morning at 3 o'clock in the morning, which is what I was doing, getting back on Friday afternoon, a lot of times, Friday evening, 7 o'clock. You have 2 days, you know, your house, and I'm not saying my house is falling apart, but there were things that couldn't get done. So this has made me just say, this is the way my life needs to be. This is how I need to be moving forward. I don't want to go back. I won't go back to the other way. I'm not saying I won't go do workshops again, but I'm not going to be doing that kind of stuff all week long. I will pick and choose. And this has just given us a whole lot more freedom, a whole lot of a stronger family. And I married my best friend years ago, and we just become better friends from being here. A lot of people say, oh, we're on top of each other. It's so bad. And I just embrace it because these are the most important people in my life. Why wouldn't I want to be with them? And one of the things I teach people when they start that is I say, okay, well, close your eyes for 30 seconds. Think of all these people who are driving you crazy aren't in your life anymore. Think of them gone. Think of something happening to them. Now wake up. Open your eyes after that 30 seconds and realize these are the most important people in your life. You don't want that scenario. You would rather have the scenario you have. And it's like, yeah, just let's not take a great situation and find all the bad in it. Let's take a tough situation and mind the good. That's what we have to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Key point over there is that, you know, I think, we forget, a lot of people forget that our family is very important. Husband and wife are very important, is a unit. Children are very important, is a unit. I was talking to somebody, I was doing a coaching session with one of the guy who wanted to start a business. And I said to him, how many hours do you work? So I work 70 hours a week. I said, you work 70 hours, how much time you spend with your children? How much spend your time with your wife? Well, I'm only the bread earner. I said, well, that's beautiful what you're doing for making money for your family. But long run, if your family will leave you, what is going to happen to you? Yeah. If something happens to you, who's going to look after you? Yeah. So think about that way. Slowly and capture, make sure there is a balance. Balance. Your children will grow up, will not know who their daddy was, who don't know what their mother was. There was a classic story in the newspaper came, and this husband and wife were very high in their jobs, and they had a son, and they had hired a nanny who were looking after that small boy. As the time passes, he started calling the nanny mother. because by the time he reached to 16, and he says, you know, I don't want to live with you guys. I want to live with my mother. You are not my mom and dad. You are just somebody who just comes in and goes out. You are not never there. Whenever I needed you, you were never there. So why I need you? So I think a lot of people lose that sort of a connection with their family, their husband, their wives, because of they are busy thinking that I am making this money for their happiness. I'm buying everything for them because they should be very thankful to me. And there was another story where a small child goes to his father and says, Dad, how much do you make an hour? And the father gets really angry and says, how could you ask me that question? And he actually shouted at him and said, go to your room. Don't talk to me like that. Then father realizes what happened. Then he went to the son and says, why? Why did you ask me that question? I said, would you please tell me how much do you make for an hour? So the father says, I make about £40 or $40 an hour. So he broke his saving box, take out $40 from there and give it to his father and said, Dad, can you spend 1 hour with me, please? Please spend 1 hour. And you can imagine that cut through you and give you that sort of a complete emotional understanding that why I'm doing it, why I'm not spending time with my children. And I remember when I used to work in a big corporate environment, I used to spend more time with my children, my kids. My daughter is 20 years old, and I got a set of twins. They are 16 years old. And they remember all those times. And I was used to be working in the corporate, and the guy who was very senior, he used to say, Sam, make sure that you spend time with your children. Those are the time will carry you forward in your life. My children remembers that. We remember the time when you used to take me out to we used to play in the rain, or we were going onto the trees and we were doing this and that. So they remember all those sort of things. And that's what I said to a lot of people, you know, don't run behind the money. That money will run faster than you. You won't be able to catch that money.
Yeah. Well, something children understand that adults forget, Sam, and what that child understood is, I can make more money. I can never make more time. And many times when parents are buying children things and buying children things, it's for the guilt they feel. It's not for the children. And I guarantee you, if you ask any child almost in the world, yeah, they want things, they do. But if you ask them, they're like, I just want to spend time with you. And that's something that is sad to realize 20 years too late. You know, it really is. And that's when most people do realize it wasn't the material things you bought. It's the time you spent with me, which, you know, that's how you make an impact on someone's life. Buying someone something's never going to really change their life a lot. I mean, yeah, sure, buying them a car can change their life to some degree, but it's not going to change their life as much as the lessons you help them learn. And the times you spend, because what our life is as we move forward, and I mean it's obvious, but it's memories, and that's what we hold are memories. And memories, you have that thought of, oh, I got the Atari for Christmas, or I got this for Christmas, but it's never as much, you know, sit in the tank while he was in the military to ride with him and to be able to look at the tank, or, you know, when he took us to the baseball game and we went back to meet some of his friends that he used to play with when he was in training camp with the St. Louis Cardinals, you know, and things like that. So those are things I remember much more than any presents that my father ever gave me. And so, you know, we have to actually ask the people we're serving, because there's the saying that says, treat people the way you want to be treated. But what we really need to do, Sam, is treat people the way they want to be treated. And the only way we know that is to ask. What would you rather do? Would you go buy something, or let me give you some money to buy something? Would you rather me take you and we go throw the ball for a little while? I mean, most kids are going to want to hang with their dad, you know, so that's just something we need to be asking the questions of, not just of our kids, but of other people as well. What can I do to be better for you? And that's one of the things I try to have managers and leaders do in business is ask, how am I doing? How am I serving you? How can I be better? And when we do that, we can start to get to the truth, and then we can start to improve so we serve those better who we are trying to serve.
Yeah, that's the one thing about, you know, we talk about emotional intelligence, which is also a very key factor in businesses and individual life. If you understand the meaning of emotional intelligence, if you know what emotional intelligence is all about, you started to learn yourself as well as your fellow human being crystal clear. Because we always suppress our own emotions, trying to be creating a completely facade on our face or a mask on our face that everything is fine, everything is great. This is you who are creating a problem, it's not me. Because we don't know our own emotions in that. So you must have heard about Daniel Goleman, who was about emotional intelligence.
Travis Bradbury is where I learned a lot of emotional intelligence from. That's where I had first heard the term about four years ago. When I'd first gotten on LinkedIn, he's one of the first people I followed, Dr. Travis Bradbury. And it's one of those things I love what he says is that he can walk into any place of business and tell pretty quickly the level of emotional intelligence of the leadership there. And it's one of the things I look for as well when I go into a business. And it's very key. If there's not a lot of awareness of that in a business, you can feel it in the energy. The people have a life sucked out of them. They don't feel important. They don't feel valued. And when we implement our programs, that's what we try to bring up a lot. Because my will of a business goes around people. Everything centers around the people. Nothing happens without the people. And I get people throwing out there, well, sales. It's like, well, you don't have a sale without a person. You don't have a product. You don't have an idea to start a business without a person. Everything starts with people. And when we can make sure, and the reason I say the will of the business, when we make sure the business revolves around the people, everything revolves around making sure your people are taken care of, they have the tools they need, the information they need, the environment they need. When they have all of those things, now the business is going to run smoother. So I completely agree with you. Emotional intelligence is one of the key issues that we are facing for people to understand better.
I think that's also create a very great team, create greater teams, create greater organization if there is a harmony on the leadership about how everything is working. Because we are competitive, we are human beings, we are always competitive in terms of I want to be a better person for that person or whatever. You know, with emotional intelligence, what I have looked at in with emotional intelligence is if you are a sales director, and you have a team of 40 sales reps in your team. Every individual got a significant trait of leadership, trait of dominance, trait of harmonization, trait of collaboration, trait of a lot of other things built in them. But you need to identify who is actually expert in different areas of their own journeys. And the best way to do it is to do an emotional intelligence questionnaire, which allows them to know how they are connecting with their directors and how they're connecting with their individuals. Then the director will know that who is the greater person in this team who can close the deal quickly, and who is the person who can do all the analytics about the competitor, about what the product you are selling, and how they're going to enhance their profitability in that sort of things. And that's where emotional intelligence comes in and tries to give them all sorts of areas of skill sets of each and every individual in their team who will learn more about each other and then can accelerate their learning and their business to a completely different platform and different dimensions.
It sounds like it opens up awareness of each other, and when we are aware of things, now we can work on them. When there's little awareness or lack of awareness, it's really hard to know how to address people. So that, you know, it sounds like a very good process. I just want to share with you something really quick. Yes. You were talking about teams. When I was in Memphis and I left, this was a scrapbook that my team made for me before I left. They called it the house that Thane built. Uh-huh. And it's a huge scrapbook, and I didn't build it. We all built it together. But that was one of those things where you build a team, it's a family, and you do it through being aware of each other and relying on each other, trying to keep the drama down and trying to keep the professionalism up. And it was an amazing place. But the fact that they made that scrapbook for me before I left, it showed me how the way I had – try to build that business with my team was the right way to build a business. We were the first team in the history of a 50-year company to make money in its first year. It had that no business there had ever made money in their first year in the maintenance division before, and we did. And it was because we worked together as a team. And there was nobody. I heard Michael Jordan in The Last Dance say, yeah, I was hard on people. I was difficult on people. But I can tell you this, Michael Jordan would never ask someone to do something he wouldn't do himself. And that was my motto way back many years ago as well, is there's nothing I will ask you to do that I won't do. If I'm asking you to go out and spray at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll meet you to go spray at 3 o'clock in the morning, even though I'm the branch manager. If I'm asking you to get out in the heat and work, I'll get out in the heat and work with you. So by setting that example, by modeling that, that's how we build that culture. But then by the emotional intelligence, as you're talking about, getting to know each person while we're out there working with them, that's the key. By asking questions, talking with them, riding in the truck with them, getting to know more about them. People ask me, how's the best way to build an engaged team? Because that's what I'm all about, is getting more engagement out of teams. And that means actually working with each other. I said, well, the best way to get engaged teams is to start engaging with them. Well, what do you mean? Getting to know them, it's not about just knowing how they are at work. It's about knowing them as a person and knowing what drives them and helping them to achieve those things, even outside of work. I remember we had guys who couldn't read, and we helped them get reading lessons. We helped them to learn how to read. And, you know, there were guys who I was told would never be able to be moved up in companies because of their lack of being able to speak English. Those people were some of my best performers, and one of them even ended up in a multi-million dollar company being the number one account manager of over 50 operations. And I was told, oh, you could never promote that guy. It's having belief in people, believing in them and giving them everything they can to do it. And when you see that, again, that's where the success fades away and the significance becomes important. And that's what the book gave to me. That scrapbook made me feel significant. It wasn't just success. I had touched each of these people's life. Each person wrote a note to me on one of those pages about how I had impacted their lives. And it just meant so much to me. That's worth more than any paycheck, any bonus check. And I've gotten some big ones in my life. It's worth more than anything I've ever gotten. I keep it right by my desk, and I don't keep any checks right by my desk. So that's what life is about, my friend. It's, you can make all the money you want in the world, but guess what? You can lose it really quickly. But when you make these relationships, those are a lot harder to lose. And the things you've done to help people change people's lives, when you look back, and this is another lesson my wife taught me. She said, Thane, it's not going to matter how green the grass was, how well the trees were pruned. What's going to matter is that people reach out to you and say, Thane, thank you for making an impact in my life. Thank you for helping me get to where I wanted to in life. Thank you for supporting me when I didn't believe in me. And I've had hundreds of those comments in my life because that's what I've dedicated my life to, not earning a bigger paycheck, helping other people have a better life.
Amazing, amazing. And this is quite a great, great insight. And I completely resonate what you have been saying. And I remember working with the large team as well. And I will remember their birthdays and remember their understanding about the joking about their children and making sure that everything is hunky-dory. And my last corporate job was in 2015 when a lady came back from her maternity leave. And I said exactly the same thing, you know. I've been through my own journey. I have three girls. I know the amount of work, and especially with the woman, you have to go through with so many hormones changes going on in your body. And you have to remember if your child are going through with a sniffle or anything like that, the nursery will say, sorry, we can't have it because it's going to spread it to all other children as well. You have to stay home and look after your child, even though you are paying for the child minding or nursery. And I used to say to her, you know what? Just work from home. That's important. You know, you have to be with your child and you're working from home. What the better thing you can do? Spend more time with your child, you know. And because when you go through with your own journey, you can completely resonate with people. And it was completely changing the way people started. And then they will be like supportive to you. You know, say, Sam, don't worry. I'll complete this. Don't worry. I'll do that. Don't worry. It will be completed. You just do whatever you are doing it. We will take care of that one. So it's working hand in hand. And that's the beauty of working with people with self-awareness and those sort of things. This create a great incentive for the for yourself, the moral of the individual, and it works in a very great harmony together. So, tell me about your hobbies.
You know, you see my toys and other things back here, and I do collect those. But I also, it's not something I talk about a lot. But I once a month send a box of toys to Dartmouth Children's Hospital, and they're new toys. They're not old toys because I know those children need them, and this, you know, these those it's more important to them than they are to me. So I try to do that. But I other hobbies I have, I'm not a hunter by any means. I don't like to shoot things, but I like to shoot a gun. So I have, I'm able in Vermont, I can go in my backyard. It can be a rifle range. So I like to shoot it, and I like to shoot archery. Archery is a little more artistic and zen-like. I love to be the arrow to hit into the target. I like to shoot like that. But you know, as far as hobbies, my family and my dogs that are also part of my hobbies as well, as far as things that I prefer to spend time on when I'm not working. And that's pretty much it as far as that goes. But I, you know, one of the things I've come to find is that I love what I do so much, working with people and helping people. Saturdays and Sundays, I mean, I do it as well. It's not work. I get off the phone after an hour coaching conversation and I don't feel depleted. I feel energized because somebody's thanked me for helping me make their life better. And so I don't even look at what I do as work anymore. I look at it as a job and my career, but it's not work because I enjoy it too much. And we're starting our new classes tomorrow on, I'm with my new platform. It's my old platform, but I've been doing the online Zoom classes and we go through books, we go through sessions. Next week, we're starting, starting tomorrow, we're doing the Leaders Building Leaders platform, which is my belief that it starts in the home. Mm-hmm. You start with building the people closest to you. It leads to your community. You help in the community. You also take that leadership to the workplace, the place of work. Even if you're not the boss, you try to lead by example. It does, because I believe there's different levels of leadership. And when we help by building better leaders in our home, building better leaders in our communities, in our workplace, now we're creating a better world, just like I talked about earlier. So this is the class we're starting tomorrow, and that's my new process. And believe it or not, I teach, I'm a John Maxwell certified coach and trainer. And I've been teaching a lot of that online, but when I threw up everyone the options of courses, a couple of John Maxwell courses and mine, everybody voted for mine. So that made me feel really good that they said, this sounds like the most interesting and the best, the one we want to do. And that's the only reason I did it, because I've never done this on Zoom before. So I've had to create new media over the week, last week, getting ready for this week. And again, that wasn't work. It was enjoyable, because that was probably the most excited I've been in a long time, because people want to learn my platform over a John Maxwell platform. Blows me away, but at the same time, I have to make sure that it is top notch. So I spent the whole week last week preparing those five lessons, and we're ready to go for September now, starting tomorrow afternoon.
Amazing, amazing. Are you still enrolling people in that course?
Oh yeah, you can join anytime. It's only $20 a month. You get, that's $5 a week, Sam. And actually for September, it's less, because there's 5 weeks in September. Mm-hmm. And my goal is to get as many people on as possible, not just for money, but because you have more impact and it's more fun. A class of 20 is much more fun than a class of two. Yeah. You get more, because you have more minds, you have more energy, and you have more ideas. And like you said, yes, it's always better face to face, but I get a lot of energy from here, from you, kinetically, so it's not bad through this either. If you have the right mindset, we can build a lot of energy this way.
Absolutely. So do share the link to me, because once we will release your podcast, I will put all the links and information about your website as well. So today we had Then Isaac all the way from Vermont, USA, and what a great conversation! What a great humble individual who is helping several hundred thousand people right now. His mission is to help as many more. So get in touch with him, because what he can offer is to give you a structure to create some better future for yourself and those around you, better teams as well as better you. So get in touch with Ethan Isaac via the information I will provide on this podcast. So thank you very much for being on my podcast, Chai with Sam Dosa. And I wish you all the best for your future endeavors.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate it so much. It was an honor, my friend.